Good evening and welcome to Race Talk with Trish. I am Trish England. Tonight's guest is one of the more popular figures in American racing. He's literally everywhere you look. His name is Ryan Eversley, and no lie, I knew him before he was born. His parents, John and Jessica, both worked in the same race shop as my boyfriend. Their wedding was held on the weekend before mine and Carl's. Ryan exploded on the stage a couple of years later, already knowing that racing was going to be his ticket out of the playpen and the mill. John Eversley is a respected car mechanic, restorer, and fabricator. Ryan learned the basics from him at an early age and went to work for his first IMSA team when he was in his mid-teens. He learned the racing industry from the inside out and began his racing foundation at the Panos Racing School while he bounced around in carts to gain some seat time and some experience. His first race at the age of 20 was at Sonoma in a Star Mazda in 2003. From there, he went on to race in the Pirelli World Challenge, Continental Tire Sports Car Challenge, Grand Am Rolex Sports Car Series, American Le Mans, IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship, and Stadium Super Trucks. He's been associated with Honda for much of his career, most recently Acura TLX and NXS models, but he's pretty hot in a Civic Type R TCR, too. Most people know him for his long-running podcast, Dinners with Racers, that he co-hosts with Sean Heckman. I honestly believe that he knows everyone in the business and has sat down for burgers and fries with most of them. He's also broadcast crazy and insightful commentary via podcast at the 24 Hours of Daytona. His never-ending travels has taken him down every highway in the U.S. and to tracks abroad where he has won some glory. Every February for the last 10 years, he's led his pals down the streets of Atlanta in their underwear for Cupid's Undie Run to raise money for his favorite charity, the Children's Tumor Foundation. When he's not waiting to race, he promotes the Acura and Continental Tire brands. His most recent exploit was a lengthy road trip called Cruising the Continental U.S. with Rutledge Wood in very spiffy cars and never-ending video coverage. So I present the nicest, most genuine, and fun racers around, Ryan Eversley. Welcome to the show, kiddo.
Well, you left out one very, very important detail, which is not only have you known me since before I was born, but you are also my godmother, which I'm very proud of, and I think that should have been in the notes as well.
Well, thank you very much for that. I know I'm godmother to your sister, Jamie, and don't get to see y'all as often as I would like.
Yeah, it's been busy. We keep trying to get together, and we're having this call right now, and I'm in a hotel, which I think I spend more time in hotels than I do at home. But
I know you do.
Part of the sport, and I don't mind it because I get to do some amazing things, and I know that won't last forever because eventually I'll be washed up and old knees. And that's what I'll spend all my nights at home. So I'm happy to be in a hotel here in California playing with some cool cars on a racetrack. And I'm really happy to be talking to you.
Well, where do you want to start?
You tell me where we're going.
let's see. How about being a teenager, being dropped into a team at early age, turning wrenches, and learning with your skills?
I was, already seeing the writing on the wall when I was in middle school and high school that I really didn't think college was going to be something I would want to do because I'd be not racing by that point and being involved in the industry. And my parents, who you know very well, were really cool and said, look, if you are serious about this, you have to get a job in the sport, you have to continue to get your high school education, and you can go to college when you're 30, but we know you're not going to be able to start a racing career when you're 30. So why don't we take the necessary steps, get you out of public school, let you homeschool, and go get a job. And, you know, I was raised in a household where it was very much lead by example and taught by example. So Dad would let us help out in the garage, but he wouldn't hold your hand through stuff. He'd let you watch him, and then he'd let you try it. And I think that was the right way to learn, because very hands-on experience. But I didn't have any interest in being a mechanic. I wanted to be a race car driver. And when I would talk to Dad about how to make this happen, he pointed out there was a driver named David Murray who was a gopher on one of the teams my dad ran back in the 80s, that he basically would clean the bodywork, take out the trash, go and get takeout food, do all the grunt work that no one wants to do. And it's kind of like an intern deal, you know, you get to work on a cool program, you get to go to some races, and it's really fun. And David Murray turned that into a very successful long-term sports car racing career, where he eventually became a factory Porsche driver and raced at Le Mans. And so I remember thinking, okay, we don't have family money backing me. I don't have a sponsor that is going to make this happen for me. So I'm going to have to work my way into the sport like David Murray did and find a way to get behind the wheel. And so I got a job with Mike Johnson, who used to race and drive cars himself, and it's probably more famously known at the time for being on MTV's Real World London. So to get to go work for a guy at Road Atlanta who I'd watched on TV as a kid was kind of surreal for a while. But Mike understood that I wanted to drive bad enough that I was willing to leave public school, leave all my childhood best friends going to school, and go try to take on the world of professional racing. And so I think he respected that. And also, I was willing to work for free just to get in the door. And he told me right away, he's like, we don't have enough budget to hire anybody, but if you want to hang out for a little while and work on the cars, and we'll show you some stuff. And if we get this second car to come on after the Daytona 24-hour for the full season, then I'll be able to hire you. And so I worked for Mike for a couple of months getting ready for the 2001 Daytona 24-hour, not having really a clue what I was doing, just trying to be helpful. And I was so excited that I was showing up at, you know, 6:45 to be there at 7, you know, and leaving as late as everybody else, because I was so stoked about being able to do this. And we went to Daytona. We had a young driver named Andy Lally, who I'd gotten to know over the course of the time leading up to Daytona, and we ended up winning the damn thing. And when we did that, that signed on enough drivers to the second car that were bringing funding that Mike could hire me. And so after working for a couple of months for free, I got my first paycheck in racing, and I spent the next 3.5 years there. And we had some amazing success, but we also had some amazing times. We had some bad times as well, but I got to go to Le Mans, and I got to win a championship as a mechanic. And important to note that I was also gaining relationships every weekend at the racetrack. I talked to everybody. I try to meet everybody. And when your last name is synonymous with somebody that has a good reputation, there's a little bit of pressure there to keep that going. And so I tried to work as hard as I know my dad would, because his name is on the line too. If I'm out there doing a bad job and it sounds like John Eversley's kid stinks at racing, that wouldn't be good. So I had that natural, and he never said anything like that, but I just naturally had that motivation to make sure I was honoring my family name. And I think that really helped. Plus, I wanted to drive so bad, I was willing to do anything, work for free, work overtime, double time, you know, multiple jobs, whatever it took. And fortunately, through working for Mike, I was able to meet several people that were letting me get opportunities behind the wheel. And eventually that led to me getting proper race car rides.
When did you do the Panos school?
I did the Panos Racing School the summer of 2001, and I'd been saving all the money that I was making working at Archangel, because I was still living at home, and I had bought a crappy little BMW, which I still own today, and I didn't have, like, all I had to do was pay the very cheap insurance and put the gas in it. You know, I was still living at home. I don't have any real bills or overhead, so I was socking away all the money I was making working for Mike, and I was able to save up enough to do the Panos school. I think Mom and Dad put in a little bit of money too. And I think I also got a discount because Dad had worked for Panos for a long time. And so we were able to pull it all together to go do this school. And I'll never forget that my instructors were guys like Joe Foster, who eventually created the Dempsey Racing Program, Apache Dempsey, Eric Foss, who's now one of my best friends and one of the best sports car drivers I ever raced against. Charles Espelov, who's a multi-time sports car racing champion. Andrew Davis, who's a multi-time race winning and sports car champion. All these big name drivers are my instructors, and they all knew me from either working for Mike or from growing up around the racetrack. And it was really cool because I felt like the very first day at the Panthers Racing School, I was already getting treated like, you're going to work here one day and you're going to represent this. You know, it was like I was the little brother, and that gave me that extra confidence and also motivation to push hard and do a good job, because it wasn't like they're like, who are you? Yeah, we don't care. There was like, hey, we know how serious you are about this, so pay attention to this and look at that. And I built friendships in that three-day school that I still have to this day, because they became coworkers, you know, a couple years later. And the other thing I remember vividly about my Panthers Racing School experience was that it rained for 2.5 of the 3 days. And we're talking rained, like pouring. And those cars didn't have ABS and they didn't have traction control. And I learned a lot really quickly. And I think to this day, my career, I've had some strong success in wet weather racing. And I attribute that back to spending 2.5 days getting soaked at Road Atlanta.
What were you driving? Well, Panos, of course, but which one?
So that was back when they had the Panos GTRA, which was a tube-frame, five-speed gearbox, V8. I think it had roughly 300 horsepower. It wasn't super heavy, but it was a big, loud, you know, Panos front-engine car. And then they also had Audis for the off-track stuff. So you do, like, skid pad and an Audi TT. You do some, like, defensive driving maneuvers and lead follow maneuvers in Audi A4s and S4s and stuff like that. And so kind of got a little bit of everything, some front-wheel drive experience, some rear-wheel drive experience. But I didn't care about any of it. I just wanted to be on a racetrack so bad. And from the moment we left pit lane, I was like, yeah, I got to do this for the rest of my life.
And you will. What series do you like best?
You know, I it's hard to say because, let me be completely honest, they're not doing a whole lot of favors for themselves lately to make you want to race there, between driver rankings and the cost to compete. It's getting harder and harder to say which one you like the most. But I will say that IMSA is a very big series still to this day, so it's pretty cool if you can win an IMSA race. That means something to a lot of people. The SRO series that used to be called World Challenge has got some huge fields right now, and I'm pretty excited to get to race in that as well. But if I'm being honest, the dumbest, most fun thing I've done lately is the Stadium Super Trucks with Robbie Gordon, because those things are just stupid and awesome and fun and fast and loud and scary. And I rolled one over at Mid-Ohio 2 years ago and finished third. And more people have come up to me and said, we love that Continental Tire Stadium Super Truck that you drive, than they've ever said anything about sports cars. So
I watched you do that, and I was going, oh, my God, he's having a ball.
Yeah, I've never rolled anything before. And I remember as I got – because I got hit midair, which turned the truck, so when it landed, it shot off the road like a bullet. And I remember as I was flying through the grass down the back straightaway at Mid-Ohio, I'm thinking to myself, I'm spinning. These tires are not straight anymore. So when the front tires become the back tires, they're going to hook and I'm going to roll. And as that was happening, it started to go. And I said to myself, oh, I'm finally going to roll something. Like, it's finally going to happen. Fortunately, it landed on the wheels and I was able to keep going.
Thank you, Hans DeVries.
Yeah. Oh, my.
You think you're going to do that again?
You know, we have we've got a lot of time. How should I put it? I have a lot of conflicts with scheduling, and unfortunately, Continental Tire has been my biggest supporter outside of Honda. They've covered our podcast, a TV show. They've hired me to be a social media influencer and things like that. I've gotten to go to events all over the country for them. And, and they pay me to do that stuff, which is awesome. So they asked me to drive the truck 2 years ago. I got to do two races, one at Toronto for the IndyCar weekend and one at Mid-Ohio for the NASCAR weekend. And it was awesome. Unfortunately, since then, we had COVID, which shut things down. And then this year, the three open races they had for me are all on weekends that I'm either racing for Honda or I'm filming for my TV show, Dinner with Racers. So, unfortunately, I don't think I'll get to do it this year because I've just got too much other stuff going on. But that's also a really good problem to have.
When's the last time you were home?
Well, April of this year, April was pretty boring because we had a decent gap in the schedule. But May, I'm going to be gone pretty much every week of May. And then I am gone for almost every week in June. And then I think I get to, like, stay home for more than 3 days in a row, like, the second week of July.
Wow. Well, it sure beats last year.
Yeah, I'm definitely ready to be on the road after sitting out for COVID for a while. But honestly, you know, the first few months of COVID, I did, you know, the same thing everybody else did. We all sat home and didn't know what to think or what to do. And then my partner, Sean Heckman, on Dinner with Racers, once they kind of told us what the schedule was going to be for IMSA, we said, all right, we've got budget. We can try to do a safe version of our show. Let's hit the road and see what we can do. And one of the episodes we did was based on how racetracks are handling COVID. So I think the most annoying word now is pivot. You know, people say pivot all the time since COVID. We had to pivot and change directions. But our version of pivot was, let's still make the show, but this is a big deal, and racetracks are going to have a really tough time during a pandemic because they can't sell tickets, they can't have fans, so how are they going to stay alive? And so I'm really proud of the episode we created that showed the plight that racetracks had on their hands last year and will continue to in certain areas that they can't sell tickets for. So, you know, I'm happy to be at a racetrack right now at an event that journalists are allowed to travel to for this Acura gig, because it's the first one that a lot of them have done in a year.
Wow. How long will you be out there? Is this leading up to a race this weekend?
So I am here until the weekend, and then I fly back to Atlanta. I change my suitcases, and I fly directly to Columbus, Ohio, for this upcoming weekend's IMSA, the Acura Sports Car Grand Prix, which is at Honda Sum Track, Mid-Ohio, and so I'll race there, and then I go straight from there to, I believe, California for a Continental gig, and then I go from there to Austin, Texas for a TV show filming for our stuff, and then I go from there, I believe, the next race after that's Watkins Glen for IMSA, so a lot going on.
Wow. Let's look back at your career a little bit. Tell me about winning in Japan.
China. I went to China.
China, excuse me. Pardon me. Yeah, I know that.
So the China trip was so it was so bizarre because I grew up just outside of Georgia, outside of Atlanta. I spent my teen years in Winder, Georgia, which is out in the sticks, and I would never have thought that being good at driving a car would get me the chance to go to China, get paid to go to China to drive a race car. Like, what are we talking about? This is crazy. And so a lovely man named Arthur Law bought an Acura NSX GT3 car, and he wanted to use it for track days and race events. And China has a very strong GT field that's kind of their own countrywide racing, and nobody had an NSX. And he is a major, major Honda fan, and so he's like, hey, I got to get this car. And when he bought the car, he asked if they had a pro driver that could show them how to use the car properly, how to turn it on, how to shut it off, all that basic stuff, but that could also drive it at a time attack event, which is basically qualifying. You know, you don't do any side-by-side racing. You're just racing against the clock, and fastest car wins. And so I was blown away that Acura and HPD, the company I worked directly for, offered my services. And when I got the call that I got to go to China, I was like, are you kidding? Like, really? And I went over there. I got to meet some really lovely people. I had kept a very open mind of what I thought China would be like versus what people say it is or what you read about or see on the news. And I was pleasantly surprised how nice everyone was and how people seemed to be the same as everywhere else I go. You know what I mean? A lot of hardworking people that are just trying to get by. And the racetrack was pretty neat. I can't remember the name of it now, which is embarrassing. It'll come to me in a minute. But to get to go to a whole new racetrack in a whole new part of the world that I never thought I'd see, eat foods from all sorts of different, you know, places, was really special. And on top of that, our car was the fastest car there by like a mile, so I looked like a rock star. And if you go back through my social media feed, you'll see that they brought out a bunch of sponsor girls that had Acura logos all over them, and I literally looked like a rock star. The photos are ridiculous because it's me, this awesome NSX, we're the fastest car, we're winning, we have a trophy, and like these 12 beautiful women that are very scantily dressed, and I'm just like, this is weird. Like, I don't deserve this. So it was awesome. I had a fun time. A side story to that is that you go all the way to China. It's like some ridiculous 18-hour flight or something. You connect through Seoul, South Korea, to go over to Hong Kong, and then you drive 3 or 4 hours on this like crazy bridge that goes underneath the ocean and back out again, and you end up in China. And I'm there about 12 hours in the country, and I'm at the racetrack, and I turn a corner, and I run into a kid I know that I raced against 2 years ago. He was a factory Bentley driver. His name's Adderley Fong. And I thought, man, racing is such a small world, but I could be literally on the other side of the planet. I go to a racetrack, and I run into somebody I know within, like, 5 minutes of being there.
Wow. Well, if you could pick a country and an event somewhere out of the United States, a big international success, what would it be?
You know, I, as a kid, I always wanted to race at Le Mans, and winning Le Mans was like my goal, but it's lost a lot of its luster for me because it's become more about sort of political, and it's like you have to be in a factory car, and I don't know, it just doesn't do it for me as much as it used to. It's still awesome, and I'd love to do it, but the events that I look at that I'm like, man, I want to do that. The Bathurst.
That's it. I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, the Bathurst GT3 race, I think it's called the Bathurst 12 Hours because I think the supercar, the Super V8s or whatever, no, they're not V8s anymore, but the Australian supercar series, I think that's the 1,000 mile race. But either way, I want to race at Bathurst in that GT3 race they have down there. The fans in Australia, we have Dinner with Racers fans out the wazoo down there because they're so racing hungry and they love fun and they love jokes and they seem to get us. And so it's so crazy to me that like every year during the Bathurst endurance races, while I'm watching the race, fans will be tweeting me or sending me Instagram pics of our stickers that they ordered or that they bought, or the hats and shirts that they bought from over here. I mean, it blows my mind. And I just, that racetrack seems insane. It's on the side of a mountain, Mount Panorama. Yeah, it's so fast. They have kangaroos every year on the track, which is scary. There's some of the best drivers in the world, and there's some of these drivers that are so awesome, and you've never heard of them because they just race down there, but they're total badasses. So that race to me is like super high up on my bucket list. And then I'd also like to do the 24 Hours of Spa. I just love that track. It always seems so cool. And they have a GT3 race every year, which I think I'm at the top of my game in GT3 when I race with Acura. And I'd like to be able to go over there and show that to people. So those are the two big ones that stand out, Spa 24 Hour or the Bathurst 1000, or the 12 Hours of Bathurst, whatever they call it.
That's perfect. But I'd be scared to death. That's a scary track.
Yeah, I love that stuff. You know, like when you do a street course, street courses are kind of scary because they're lined with concrete, and you get it wrong, it's a pretty big penalty. And I think a lot of racetracks these days, the new ones that are designed, they're really kind of cookie cutter. They've got a lot of runoff, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't be as safe as possible, but they lose the character, you know, and it's funny to me that, like, these new tracks get built, these concourses or country clubs, and they definitely have a purpose. They're great for people with street cars that want to go have an experience, but they're not going to get you as excited and nervous as, like, VIR or Road Atlanta or Road America, where you're like, man, if I get this wrong, there's a big penalty to pay. And if I get it right, it's going to feel like the perfect golf swing where the ball goes a million miles, you know. And so tracks like Spa and Bathurst, they pay that back. You get the lap right, it's huge. You get it wrong, you feel it.
Well, that's kind of why I've always visualized you and Andy doing Pikes Peak.
So it's funny because I had a short opportunity at Pikes Peak that ended up going away with Honda. They were going to run a prototype car up it, and they tested the car with another driver. I think Justin Wilson, rest in peace, JW, he tested that car, I think at Pikes, or at the Pikes Peak Oval, or not Pikes Peak Oval, whatever the maybe the Duke got Pikes Peak. They had a little tiny oval out there. And it did not run well, and so the car never got to go do the race, but there's a chance I'd get to do that. And there was also talk of me running a TCR Civic Type R that I race in IMSA up the mountain. I was all about that too, but I think races like that are huge, you know, because we're really starting to see a lot of dumbing down of ingenuity and technology and thinking outside of the box and sports car racing. Everything's homologated. They don't even want you to have strategy better than other people. But Pikes Peak, you got to figure out how to get up that mountain without killing yourself. You know, like every year it claims either someone's life or damn near. And that's scary stuff right there. And if you can do that successfully, you're achieving something.
Hmm. What are you going to do this year?
This year I'm full-time in the IMSA series racing for Honda through a team called Atlanta Speedworks, which is based near Road Atlanta. My longtime sports car racing competitor and friend, Todd Lamb, is the team owner, and we've known each other a long time and have a good relationship, so it's easy to work with people you know. And so I signed on to drive with them for those 10 races. I'm currently working on trying to get back in an NSX and the endurance races in IMSA, and I'm also racing a GT4 car in the SRO GT4 America series with my longtime coaching client, Joe Rubo. And we just had our best results so far in our two events we've done for him. We just finished sixth out of like 38 cars or something at Austin, at COTA, just this past weekend. So busy year of doing the GT4 stuff. I'll have the TCR stuff. That's going to be about 16 to 17 weekends of racing. And then outside of that, I'm coaching drivers in a couple different series. And then the big priority, though, outside of my driving, is making a season 3 of Dinner with Racers TV and more podcasts. So it's going to be a busy, pretty much from May forward until around November, it's going to be busy, busy, busy.
I don't know how you'd have time for the podcast because that requires so much travel. How many seasons have you had?
So I kind of stopped counting. I think we're on season 7 of the podcast. We're on season 3 of the TV show. That'll come out this year. But we kind of stopped considering it seasons because sometimes we'll just go on a midsummer road trip, crank out 6 or 7 episodes, you know, whatever we can get, and then we can put that out as quick as possible. So it's not like it's necessarily seasonally released. For the most part is, but every now and then we'll try to squeeze in a few more here, a few more there, but it's tough to do. We're a two-man band, you know, and Sean has to handle pretty much all of the production work, and when it's just the two of us, there's only so much that can be done, and the workload that we take on to do that, to create this stuff, we will never just put out crap just to put out something. It's always going to be done the way Sean and I like to do things, which is, you know, under-deliver, over-promise, over-deliver as much as possible, and always try to think outside the box and come up with new ideas to help fans enjoy the sport. And so I think if you look at some of the things we've done, I'm proud to say that we're absolutely the top of our game when it comes to creative content in motorsports. And it's hard to do when it's just two of us. So it takes up a lot of time, but I think I got that work ethic from both my parents. They're both super hard workers. And even then, I'm working half as hard as Sean Heckman, because that guy, he will work himself to death before he'll not finish a project. It's so impressive.
Yeah, he's really, really good at what he does. Plus, y'all are so funny.
Yeah, it's been really, really, it's been interesting from my perspective. I'm sure Sean would say the same thing, to see how our friendship has grown from doing this stuff, because we spend so much time together when we do the show that it's impossible to spend that much time together with someone and not want to punch them in the face, especially when you're working long days and you're as cranky as we can both be when it's tired. And I'm very proud to say that we've had our moments of disagreements and being frustrated and angry and flat out mad at each other, but we still push so hard to put out cool stuff because there's a pride to that. It's the same competition that I have when I want to outdrive another driver. He has that for wanting to outwork his competitors, and I have it too, because he and I, we can't do it without each other. And so if I can motivate him or he can motivate me to do cool stuff, it's that same competitive racing feeling, which is, I think, why it's something we still do.
What guests have you not had yet and that you're dying to get?
Top of my list is John Force, because he's just such a bigger-than-life personality. That guy, I mean, I don't think we even have to show up to the recording. I think we could just send him a microphone and he could send us back whatever they got and it's going to be gold. We had the opportunity to get a couple of big celebrities going into 2020 in racing, and unfortunately COVID put that on hiatus because a lot of companies that sponsor drivers won't let them do public appearances until things are a little bit more settled down. So, but I think John Force would be a really big one for us. I also think getting like a Danica Patrick, because I'd really like to ask her some questions that I think most people tiptoe around, or she doesn't respect enough as a driver to answer the way I think she would for someone like myself. So, you know, there's a couple of people out there that I think we would uncover their true personality versus what some people assume them to be like.
I'd like to see you speak. I'd like to hear one with Danica. I think she would surprise you how down to earth she can be.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at a Danica Patrick story, and I think to myself, like, I have nowhere near the amount of fans that she does. And I can be overwhelmed at times with not feeling like I'm doing enough for the fans or not taking enough time at racetracks, because you actually do have to race and think about what you're doing. And I can't imagine what it's like to be at that level of fame and that level of pressure before you even get on the racetrack, and then add into the fact that she's a female in a male-dominated sport. You want to talk about how to really get somebody on edge and you know, feeling pressure. So I'd like to really discuss that stuff with her at some point and just see what her thoughts are on it. But the way Sean and I do it, you know, no agenda, no, let's get down to it. You tell us the good, you know, nothing like that. Just have a meal and some drinks and see what comes up.
Good luck with that. That would be cool.
Yeah, we'll see.
What's next? Anybody have any questions? We don't want crickets here.
Well, I got all these people unmuted, but most of them are online without any voice, so not much to be done there.
Oh, okay. So most people are online tonight, not on teleconference. That's interesting. Well, keep on talking, kiddo. You tell me where you want to take it from here.
You know, it's been the last couple of years, I think one of the toughest things about the sport has become how expensive it's getting, obviously, but also the other avenues that companies can market themselves to instead of racing that get big audiences. You know, we have kids that are playing video games online that have nothing to do with race cars getting paid because they have millions and millions of people following them. And so the reason I do so much with the podcast and with other like companies like Continental, or why I'm sitting here in Laguna Seca, is to try to raise value for my partners. Because if all I do is drive a race car really fast, that's pretty cool. But a lot of people can do that. And if it's me versus another fast guy, well, now I can say I've also spent, you know, an entire day driving the president of American Honda around the racetrack and didn't hurt anybody, didn't kill myself in the process. And we enjoyed talking to one another, so I built a little bit of a relationship there. But also, I'm about to, in about 15 minutes, hop off this call and go have a dinner with all the journalists that drove the car all day, and I'm going to have to speak to them professionally representing Acura, representing Honda Racing HPD, and obviously myself. And that's something that I think a lot of drivers don't focus enough on, but then are the first ones to complain about not having opportunity. So I guess the lesson I would want to convey to even people in club racing, if they were like, what's the best advice you have? It's like, you got to find ways to add value to your partners that are helping you go racing. And so I get the question a lot, like, do you have any advice for a racer? It's like, being fast is awesome, but it's not all there is to it, and it's getting less and less important as less people watch the sport.
Let's see.
Here's something for you, Ryan.
Yeah, do something.
Yeah, listen, well, actually, I've been to all these places. What's your favorite racetrack these days?
So, I think people always expect me to say Road Atlanta because I grew up around there, and I definitely have a lot of love for the place and history there. But my first debut pro race was actually at VIR in Danville, Virginia, and it was in the Grand Am series, which is not in set, but basically it was in the sedan series called ST2, which was, you know, over the years has evolved into TCR. And it was really, really neat because I got to drive with Mike Johnson, who was my boss that helped me get started. And my dad had built the cars, so I was getting to drive for my dad as well. And I had never raced a pro race before, and I was able to go, I think I matched Mike's times once or something. I did something good enough in the race that I remember afterwards Mike was really impressed. He's like, hey, keep it up, you're going to be fine because you don't have any experience and you're going really fast. And I was like, wow, okay, this might be going somewhere, you know, and that was pretty neat. And then in 2010, I had my first pro win at VIR racing for the Compass 360 racing team in a Honda Civic Civic SI. And that was one of those days where it was like, hey, you belong here. You're confirmed as a legitimate pro race car driver. And I've had various other success at that track, but it's been one of those memorable places for me. And for a while, before Grand Am and IMSA merged, we didn't race at Road Atlanta in that series for years. So the closest race to home was generally VIR. So my parents would come to VIR. My grandfather, when he was still alive, he came to my last, you know, race there that I won. He was there in the crowd, and it was really exciting. So, it's just been a really special place for me and my family. And then the staff there has become, I wouldn't even say friends because it's closer than that. I mean, Connie Kerrigan, Mike Rose, my friend David Baltazar, who doesn't work there anymore, but he's still very much in part of the family at VIR. Everybody there, top to bottom, just solid people. They really understand what racers are looking for in terms of safety, but they also understand that real racers want a fast, scary, hard track to drive at. And so it's just one of those places that I'm always going to love. Tons of memories from VIR. And then Road America has become my second favorite track because I raced there for Real Time Racing, which Real Time is Wisconsin's number one sports car racing team of all time. And Road America, even without Real Time, is a hell of a racetrack. Super fast, a little scary, beautiful place. So some of the best fans you'll ever meet. They're very passionate about the racetrack. I think part of that place's charm is the Midwestern love thy neighbor vibe that you get from most people in Wisconsin. And I've had some awesome success there. Not only, you know, just winning there is a big deal, but also I've won there for Real Time, which is the hometown team. And it was one of those things. It was like one of the best days of my life. So those two tracks are very high on my list of top racetracks. And I have stories about almost everywhere we go. There are things you like and things you don't like, but those two are the first two that come to mind.
Is this your first time at Laguna, or have you been there before?
Oh, no, I've been here a gazillion times. And it's fun for me because there's a lot of folks that are here that are engineers that worked on the Acura TLX Type S or the NSX or just did the motor. They didn't do any of the handling characteristics or any of the other stuff. And so they don't get to go on a racetrack very often. They generally drive on test tracks, or they might not be drivers at all, and they let the test drivers do it. So it's kind of neat to be able to come to an event like this. I have the background that allows them to give you know, that confidence in my ability. So they say, hey, Ryan, why don't you take me for a lap in this car that I just spent 6 years building from the ground up? And to me, that's an honor because they want to see what a professional can do in their creation. And for me to be able to go wring their neck and look over and see they have wring the neck of the car and really put all the performance out there and then see the smile on their face, or even just telling an engineer who spent the last 6 years working on a turbocharger fitment, like, hey, this thing really hauls ass. Like, when I get on the power, it takes off. And seeing them smile or genuinely appreciate my feedback to the car, that's like stuff that you don't get in racing as often, you know, because like most of the mechanics you work with these days, they didn't build the car from the factory. They're prepping it. And still, there's definitely pride there. But you talk to a guy that sat in a cubicle for 5 years working on brake packages for something, to then get to see that person's face when they go for a big lap with a pro in a car, it's pretty special.
I'm going to go back to the podcast.
Sure.
You've been doing these for a long time. What's your top five favorite?
Well, the simple answer I always go to, because it won't hurt anyone's feelings, is my dad is my number one favorite episode, because it's got to be, right? You can't not say your dad if you – yeah, right? And then,
well, he's seen a lot. You know, he's got a lot to say.
Yeah, and he never brags about anything. You know, he's never the person that's like, look what I did. You have to dote it out of him. Like, hey, old man, you build that? He's like, yep. Like, come on, tell me that stuff. So to finally get to really pull some questions out of him, I think we bonded a little bit more by just being able to have that meal, and that was really special for me. And I know it was for him too. And so that was really, really cool. That was the number one. After that, I don't think I can pick a top five, because I could probably tell you the five worst before I could tell you the five best, because there's been so many great experiences from these dinners. And, you know, we're sitting here on May 5th, and Bobby Unser passed away, I believe it was May 3rd. It might have been the night of May 2nd, but just a couple of days ago. And we did a lot with Bobby. He understood what we were trying to do, and I think he really loved that we loved him. And he made us laugh so hard. And it was like, I mean, he knew he had an audience with us, and he just let it rip. And then with our way of asking questions and our style of producing stuff, it just resonated with the fans so well. And he got a lot of love for it. And so when we asked him to be on our TV show for season one on Amazon Prime, he was like, you know, absolutely. And we couldn't believe it. He let us go to his house and spend the whole day with him. We're having lunch in his living room, and we're telling war stories about the olden days. And it was just like one of those things. And he was very, very good to us. And that's something I'm never going to forget. And so, you know, he passed away. He was, I think, 87. And one of those things that, like, I see all the time, there'll be news of somebody passing away from the sport, and you're like, ah, it's too bad. And this one actually hurt, because we spent so much time with him on the show and really got to know him. And that was, like, that was surprising to me that it actually hurt that bad. But because of Dinner with Racers, I've gotten to spend 4 hours with Mario Andretti, and he knew my name, and he looked me in the eye, and he called me a race car driver. I'm never going to forget that, you know. But then there are other episodes, like one of my favorites is Steve Goff, who's a Kiwi, don't hold it against him, he's a good dude. He's a former racing mechanic for McLaren F1 when they had the likes of Senna versus Prost. And then if that wasn't enough to add to his amazing career, he then became one of the car chiefs for Alex Zanardi, and then at Ganassi, and then Juan Montoya. You know, you've heard of these guys, right? And he's just a lot like Dad, very understated, doesn't brag about anything. And I think he likes how much I like what he's done. You know what I mean? Like, I think when he and I talk, he gets a kick out of the fact that I'm like, Steve, you're crazy. Like, you never told me you won the Indy 500. You know, like, come on, man. It's just so neat. And now I get to work with him at HPD. But he's one of those guys that most fans, if Dinner with Racers didn't exist, would never know who he was. They'd pass right by him. And I'm sure he's fine with that. He's a very low-key guy. But now I get to see fans take a photo with him or talk about him or post about him on social media. He's on TV every now and then when something goes wrong with an Acura-powered race car, fixing whatever the problem is. And I'll get tweets or Facebook posts about Steve, you know, being on TV. And that just makes me so happy, because a guy like that to me is way more impressive than the fastest race car driver out there right now. Because I know I can do that too. I can drive really fast. But could I work at McLaren F1 with the likes of Senna or Prost? Could I run race cars for Ganassi to Ganassi's level of what he expects with drivers like Zanardi and Montoya? I mean, those are the biggest names you can think of. And here's a guy like Steve who's, if we don't ask questions on a podcast to him, some fans might not realize that he is absolutely a legend of the sport.
If you had to choose somebody from racing history, who would you like to have a hamburger with?
Oh, man, it's tough because, two of my biggest heroes are Ayrton Senna and Jim Clark. And so, you know, I'd love to be able to pick those guys' brain for an hour. Not even pick their brain, but just to spend. Because, like, one of the things I take away from our dinners is, like, mannerisms of people, how they act, how they treat the wait staff, how they talk to us. All those things that are intricate about that person, it'd be lovely to be able to sit down with the Jim Clark and experience his personality as a person, you know, not just as this fast race car driver. But, like, the name Senna comes up, obviously, because he's one of my favorites of all time. And Jimmy Clark, because those guys are just legendary. But Al Holbert was a big deal in my childhood, and because he's a superstar guy. And then I guess the final answer to that would be John Paul Sr. and John Paul Jr. Junior, I never was able to sit down with for the podcast. Unfortunately, I got to meet him many times, but never got to really tear into the show before his disease had made it a little bit too difficult. But then also John Paul Sr., because Jesus, right? Like, if anyone could tell a story.
I don't know how straight he would be with you, but you could try.
Yeah, absolutely. If we could get him to open up like we get some other people, he'd be amazing.
I'm thinking in terms of maybe a famous team owner or something from the past.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked to have been able to sit down with Paul Newman. I got to spend some time with him as a kid, and Dad raced with him, and then I got to work with him as a mechanic later on in life when he raced.
I remember that.
Racing a few times. Yeah, and just a lovely man. And I think he would have done it. I think he would have sat down with us, because the reason he liked me was because he knew from the – I met him as a race car driver. I was too young to know that he was an actor, and I didn't care that he was an actor. I liked him because he was racing cars, and so I got to get his autograph because he knew – he loved that I was like, man, I want to grow up and be a race car driver like you, because that's all he really wanted to be. He didn't care about acting as much as he cared about being a driver. And I think he would have done our show because he would have liked what it was about. It wouldn't have been about movies. It would have been about racing nerd stuff because I think he was as big a racing nerd as it comes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, if anybody's on the teleconference that would like to be unmuted and ask a question, please do. Hello?
Not much happening, but we're probably about time to bring this to an end. Tell us what's happening the next time, Trish, and go from there.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch everything you asked me.
Oh, I said it's about time to wrap this up and tell us what's happening at the next show and so on and so on.
Well, the next show, 2 weeks from now, is up in the air. But it's based on Burt Greenwood. And he hadn't decided if he wants to do this by himself or he would like to invite a few friends with him. So watch this space. He will be with us one way or another, but he would really like to have some of his longtime associates with him. And I think that sounds fun. The last time we did a group thing, it was very successful and we had a ball. And that's in 2 weeks. Anything else going on? Well, we got racing. We'll have Mid Ohio for IMSA coming up pretty soon. Are you going to that? I don't guess you will be going to that.
Yeah, I'll be racing the number 94 Honda Civic Type R for Atlanta Speed. I have a new teammate for this race. I'm going to be driving half the season with one gentleman named Scott Smithson, who is a newer driver to sports car racing. I think he's only done like 2 seasons of pro stuff, but he's been really fast and had some success in the SRO, which was formerly World Challenge Series last year. So I'm excited about him. He's going to be my co-driver at Mid Ohio. We've never met. We've never spoken. And I love a challenge, so I think that's going to be fun. And then Greg Strelzoff, who's been my teammate for the first 2 races, will, in theory, rejoin for the second part of his deal. He picked out 5 races, and Scott picked out 5 races. So Mid Ohio is going to be a little different, not knowing how I work with my teammate yet, but part of being a good sports car driver is you have to be able to adapt not only to people but to different, conditions and cars and all those things. So it's just one more part of the deal, which I think is fine. So looking forward to racing there. It's Honda's home track. We're going to have our work cut out for us racing against some of the other cars, but we're second in points. We've been on the podium already once this year, and I think we're going to be pretty strong. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, I've watched that car. I've watched you race that car. It's a spiffy little thing. It definitely gets out of its own way. I like watching that one.
Yeah,
that would be great.
If I could take people for hot laps in that car around a track like Road Atlanta, I think they'd be really surprised how fast those cars go through the corner.
I want to go.
Really, really fast.
Yeah, I
want
to go.
Let's do this.
I want to ride.
Well, I'm going to go to a really exciting journalist dinner where they're going to ask me what happens when you have to go to the bathroom, and they're going to ask me how fast do we go, and they're going to ask me if we've ever crashed before. So I got to make up some pretty good answers in the next 10 minutes before I get there.
I know you're rushed for time, so I'm not going to hold you up. But, oh, my goodness. You have to get all dressed up for these things?
Yeah, and it's funny because I came right from a race in Austin, so I didn't have plenty of room for nice, spiffy clothes. So I'm doing the best I can with what I got. But I think I'll fit in.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, I'm not going to hold you up because I really do know you needing to get going. But I can't tell you how happy I am to hear your voice and know that you're here. I was looking for the best opportunity of a time to get with you, and there isn't a good opportunity because you are so hard to catch.
Yeah, I'm all over the place, but it was so great to hear your voice. I love you to pieces, and I'm so glad I was able to come on your show.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ryan. And by the way, this recording will be up on the Racing History Project website tomorrow morning. So you guys who missed
it
can listen to it all over again.
That's great.
Fantastic.